Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Greetings. Welcome to another episode of Real Life. I'm your host, Jenna, along here with my brother, Roz. We see you right there, bro. Tonight, we are doing part two.
I'm here, brother.
So, when you know better, you do better. Sometimes. Go ahead, brother Roz. I know we had quite a few... Well, before you do that, today is Tuesday, June 19th, 2018.
Yes, sir.
Hope you had a good time if you celebrate June 10th. I personally, every year, I make sure my daughter read it to her little siblings, and then I ask her, did slavery ever end it? That's what I've been doing the last couple of years. Thank you, brother. Excuse me. Thank you, Brother Scotty. Go ahead, Brother Rise. How are you tonight?
Hey, man. Like Scotty says, I'm surviving behind these enemy lines, but I'm doing good to be on the air with you and talking to the family and peace to Scotty as well. Like I said, we just missed that shooting in Trenton, so I'm really feeling good. I just feel like the ancestors just watch over my family and I, and this isn't the first time that I've missed tragedy. As far as potential losing my life throughout the 44 years I've been around now, so I really am thankful that that everything worked out, at least for us personally, for the best. But I really feel for those people who have been injured. It's about 22 of them. The most critical of them all is a 13-year-old. Two of the three people have been charged now with numerous crimes. And one died in a shootout with the police. So that's the situation with that. So I'm good. I got to kind of discuss that on Tando. So I won't really get into it here. But I just found it telling that it was that no one nationwide has really said anything about it, even though it's a story that did end up spreading around the country. Like, no one's really covering it as far as the mainstream media is concerned. But we know how that goes. But so yeah.
Right. You see that? You see what Scott is telling you?
Oh, let me go.
Well, there's some little crazy stuff going on around here too, man.
No, I'm not. I'm not on. Can you hear me better? Okay, cool. Go ahead,
man. This down here, downtown Chattanooga, white dude done squared up with the police and were throwing blows with him, and they tased him.
Wow. Wow. See, we could actually put our hands up and say, please don't shoot me, and catch a hail of bullets. So, that says a lot about how the system actually works.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. That happened like 2 days ago.
No surprise, man. I just feel so sorry for all those black people who actually comply. You know, like Neely Fuller said, you know, you caught, you're a prisoner of war, you act accordingly, and you still end up getting killed, or at least they might attempt to kill you. So, man, you just never know. But if you're the right, Paul Mooney says, the right complexion for the selection for the protection, you can square off with the police and not catch a hail of bullets.
Man. Look like we got a call early, even for the... the help get started. Greetings, Brother Rio. How are you?
Greetings, brothers. Greetings. Brother Rob, did I hear you correctly? Did you say that you were in the you were at the scene of the shooting?
No, I almost went because I live in the area and I've gone there for a number of years. And my wife actually displayed her artwork there on about two different occasions. And we had stopped going for a couple of years, and this year we were actually planning to go. And I had just been dealing with the allergies all day, and that can be just physically draining on a cellular level. So I was just really tired, and I was like, I really don't feel like going anywhere. I'm really, really tired. So she was talking about going, but she told me, like, deep down, she didn't really feel like going either. So we ended up saying, okay, we're not going to go. We can maybe do something the next day or something like that. And literally, it was like 8 in the morning. My son calls me and says, Dad, guess what happened? I said, what? He said, they shot up Auto and Knight. I said, are you kidding me? He said, no. He said, like, a lot of people been shot. And as far as I know, one person has been killed. So I got up and I just started looking, you know, just looking it up. And that's how I found out about everything. And it was just bad. And actually, Brother Otis had brought some more clarity to the situation because he was speaking about the fact that one of the people involved had just gotten out of prison. I don't know how long he was on his bid for, but he had this beef with some of the people that were there and decided to settle it up, like, right there on the spot with a crowd full of innocent people walking around. So you had, like, two separate groups of people pretty much shooting at each other with innocent people all around. And then finally, the one that got killed ended up turning his gun towards the police, and they let him have it, and he died. The other two are critically injured right now. They're actually in the hospital, but I'm pretty sure they're handcuffed to the bed. And on the news here, it's been on all afternoon that they're, you know, definitely going to be charged, and they have a laundry list of charges because, it, like I said, it's 22 people that got shot. And then I'm pretty sure they're going to blame everybody for the death of the young man who turned his guns towards the officers. So yeah, it's crazy. And like I was saying, the overwhelming majority of the people that go to that event are Black. So that's why I said it felt to me purposeful that it's not being discussed. Whereas, you know, we're still hearing about all of the shooting at the school. We're still hearing about Florida. We're still hearing about even Vegas periodically. But this situation, I'm not seeing on the mainstream media. I mean, even though my wife did say that they did talk about it, but it was very brief. And after that, it's like we don't hear anything else about it. So it's making more of a waves in Jersey than anywhere else, in probably the tri-state area, because there was never a shooting of this type in this area, and especially at that event. That event has always been peaceful, and there's always been a minimal police presence because it's just not the type of event you would ever expect anything like that to happen at. And now, you know, we have this. So we'll have to see if they cancel it permanently or if they do something where they just make the security so tight that it'll just be extremely hard for anyone to think of trying that again. So we'll see what they choose to do. But yeah, that's where it's at with that.
Well, brother, I'm sorry. I'm saddened for the 22 that were injured, but I'm also joyful that you and your family were out of harm's reach.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. Because, like I said, this ain't the first time. You know, I've had quite a few occasions where, whether it was bullets or getting hit by vehicles, you name it, there's a lot of close calls I've had. And I'm just thankful that none of us were there, like you said, and I definitely feel for the families too, because all it would have taken was for me to just say, oh yeah, I'm feeling all right, let's go. And we would have been there. And more than likely, because my mother-in-law has dementia, we would have taken her with us. And if they did start shooting, she wouldn't have known what to do. So God forbid, you know, that's why I'm really, really happy and thankful you just decided not to go. Because it would have been all of us there, and who knows what would have happened or where we would have been once everything really started to jump off. So, yeah, I'm just thankful, though, to be honest. I appreciate it.
We are all thankful. Excuse me. Man, I know you wanted to talk about that, Roz. Before we get into the let's get this title back. Mm-hmm. This is part two of When You Know Better, You Do Better. Sometimes the lesser of two evils is still evil. Now, Brother Roz is going to get. We left off last week at the children. Brother Roz is going to get into some of these health articles, and at the top of the hour, we're going to talk about how we treat these children, quote unquote, mulattoes, mixed race children, how we treat them. How the ones that we know of now are acting and where they're trying to go. So, Brother Rise, you want to get into that first article?
Absolutely. Can I be heard okay?
Yes, yes. You starting to scratch up a little bit, though.
Is that better?
Yes, that's perfect.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much. Okay, just wanted to make sure. I actually wanted to switch to my other headphones. I actually forgot to switch before the show. So the first one I wanted to get into before I get into the health stuff is actually a very interesting article I came across a few days ago. And we always talk about us making inroads like Minister Malcolm attempted to do, and actually did throughout his life, and attempted to do even more before he was assassinated. He was a Pan-Africanist and had a worldview that that all African descendant people should be working together for the betterment of each other, so that we don't need to depend on outsiders to help us for anything, whether it's a Katrina type disaster or any other thing, economically, whatever you name it, we're supposed to make those kind of inroads. So this article kind of is a great sign that there are people who still have that ideology and that understanding and how they choose to function. I think it provides some hope for the future as far as us working collectively. So this one is from Black Women of Brazil. I post on them quite often because they have such great articles. This one is, in a historic visit, King Oni Adeyeye at Anytime Babatunde Ogunwusi of Ile Ife, and Ile Ife is the foundational city of the Yoruba people in Nigeria. It says that Bahia, Brazil, is declared the Yoruba capital of the Americas. So basically, he came there on a visit, and as he was there, and if anyone understands the history of Brazil and even Trinidad, they have very close ties to Nigeria, because a good portion of the people who were enslaved that came from that region came to a lot of the Caribbean islands, and a lot of them went to Brazil. Brazil is actually the most highly populated African country in the Western Hemisphere. So out of all of the countries in the West that have black people, no other country has more black people than they do. So I'm just going to read something brief from here. So it says, Brazil has a huge debt to Africa and its people. Not only is it estimated that nearly 90% of Brazilians have at least 10% African ancestry, the country was the recipient of the most African people during the transatlantic slave trade, more than any other nation, with estimates ranging between 4 to 5 million in the period of about three centuries. And throughout Brazil's history, the indelible imprint of Africa is so part of everyday life that most Brazilians don't know the extent of the influence of African peoples on the formation of the nation. Sure, everyone knows about capoeira, samba, candomblé, and the candomblé religion, but how many of us know that the style of Portuguese spoken in Brazil would actually be called Portuguese, which means black Portuguese, due to the Africanization of the language? And the state in Brazil with arguably the most African influence was and is the northeastern state of Bahia. So it gets into some of the history there, and it goes into the different Africanisms within the culture of Brazil. And essentially, the king of Ile Ife, which is a traditional African king, was known about.
Wait.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, just real quick. So you're saying they're saying that the transatlantic slave trade did happen? That's what they're saying?
Without question. And at least
I want to throw that out there.
5 million plus were actually that survived ended up in Brazil. Now you have the Palmares, you have Ganja Zumbi, which was actually an African male, I believe he was of Yoruba descent, that actually fought and created free towns that are known as Palenques or Palmares in and throughout Brazil. And to this day, those towns still exist, and those people have still been fighting even the government to this day to be recognized as free enclaves of black people within the modern state of Brazil. And so this work is still happening right now, and the connections that were made as far as that the king of Ile Ife dubbing Bahia the Yoruba capital of the Western Hemisphere pretty much says a lot, and it says a lot for the connections that should be and could be made between people here and people on the continent, just understanding the history. There's no denying that African people are throughout the Western Hemisphere did come via the transatlantic slave trade. And no matter how much people are in denial about that, it's just it's irrefutable. And it's just something I choose not to no longer entertain as far as just the type of stuff I've been hearing. I just think it's so ridiculous. It's not even worth entertaining. It's almost like WWE propaganda nonsense. Go ahead, brother.
We got that. It was a health one coming up next, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. Let me get to that right now. But I just wanted to touch on that first. I just thought it was quite interesting, to say the least, just as far as those inroads. So, yeah, let me get to the next one now. And there's some really good ones in here. Let me just run through some of them real quick. So here, this one is from Natural Blaze. Studies based on three continents show that higher than recommended doses of vitamin D prevents cancer. Let me go, and I just want to read what they say exactly. Because I know usually I think it's 10,000 IUs is what they recommend a day, so they're saying more than that. So it says research utilizing combined data from 17 studies that included more than 1,200 people from the U.S. 12,000 people from the U.S., Europe, and Asia found that optimal levels of vitamin D for colon cancer prevention are higher than the current U.S. recommendation of 600 international units or IUs per day. In the absence of vitamin D from sunlight, disease increases more than 1,000%. Experts suggest the chances of getting vitamin D from your diet are very low. That's because we don't eat like the Inuit people. 10 reasons you need vitamin D all year round. Improves muscle function. It blunts your appetite. It protects your lungs function. It can help you shed weight. It lowers your blood pressure. It shuts down cancer cells. Lowers risk of mortality. Reduces Alzheimer's risk. Affects hundreds of genes and disease preventing potential. And reduces the risk of osteoporosis. Humans make 90% of our vitamin D naturally from sunlight exposure to our skin, specifically from the ultraviolet B exposure to the skin, which naturally initiates the conversion of cholesterol in the skin to vitamin D3. The theories linking vitamin D deficiency to certain cancers have been tested and confirmed in more than 200 epidemiological studies. An understanding of its physiological basis stems from more than 2,500 laboratory studies, according to epidemiologist Cedric Garland, Dr. PH, professor of family and preventive medicine at UC San Diego School of Medicine. Quote, this is the number one chemo preventive substance on the planet, and it's natural without side effects. Unquote. I'll stop there. So basically, even I remember seeing a documentary on YouTube that was discussing the extremely high rates of colon cancer in black males. And the fact that what black males aren't told when they're diagnosed is that the overwhelming majority of black people die very quickly from that disease, and it's because they're not getting enough vitamin D. They find that if black males take the proper amount of vitamin D, that either they don't get the cancer at all, or if they do get it, they're able to conquer it. So, again, this article just confirming stuff I've talked about before in regards to this stuff, and I just, you know, it's just making it more emphatically clear that you need that vitamin D3. And if you're not getting it, then like they just said, your receptivity to cancer increases over 1,000%. That's just beyond extremely high anymore. So let me just keep going. Okay, so... Oh, yeah, this is another one that I found to be quite...
Hey, quick question, Ross.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Now, just to be sure, most people, when you go get your checkups, sometimes you have to ask for those results so you can know what you're short on. Just want to throw that out there. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah. No problem. Well, thank you. So let me get back to the next one. So this one is, let me close this out, taking up unnecessary space. There we go. So this one is also from Natural Blaze. Terminal woman cured of breast cancer with her own cells after chemo failed. Thanks to new experimental immunotherapy using her own cells, her body could finally overcome the cancerous cells. The new kind of immunotherapy is called adoptive cell transfer and was used on the woman after she had given up fighting for her life. So essentially, this article is about a woman who had tried everything, chemo, everything possible, radiation, to try and cure her breast cancer. It was such an acute and intensely pervasive form of cancer that nothing worked. And they did a new form of therapy basically, and I believe it has to do with stem cell therapy. I want to just open the article and just see if that's what they're speaking to, but they were able to take her own cells and use them in, it's not even opening up the article, I don't know why, but they basically took her own cells and were able to use them as a part of her immune system response to the breast cancer, and it actually worked where everything else basically failed. Something else that I've talked about that is also a known cancer killer is marijuana. CBD oil is known to literally destroy cancer cells. And it's something that they've been able to use scientifically, even with animals, like dogs that have had cancer, they've given CBD to, and the dog has been cured of cancer that was highly aggressive. So that's something else to think about. Another one here that I wanted to touch on, because I just think it's our daily reality as people, and some of us might actually be addicted, and we aren't even aware that we're addicted, but this kind of speaks to that. So it's from CNN.com, Cerebrally Naive Network, as Dave says, .com. Smartphone addiction could be changing your brain. You may be one of the growing number of Americans or global citizens who have a bit of nomophobia. Nomophobia, you mutter as you read on this, on your ever-present smartphone. Of course not. No mobile phone phobia is a 21st century term for the fear of not being able to use your cell phone or other smart device. Cell phone addiction is on the rise. Surveys show, and a new study released Thursday adds to a growing body of evidence that smartphone and internet addiction is harming our minds literally. How do you know if you're addicted? There's an online course or quiz to find out, which has been translated into Spanish, Italian, and Turkish. And they give you a scale of 1 to 10, and they give you the actual questions, so you can actually ask yourself those questions. And then based on that, it'll be an extremely accurate indicator on whether you're addicted to your phone. Now, because phones function similar to drugs, you get a dopamine rush every time you go into Facebook and you see that red sign telling you that people have liked your message or responded to your message. Same thing if you have tweets waiting for you, or if you go into your phone and you see that someone sent you an email. All of those things are used as a reward, and that reward, that feeling of reward, releases the dopamine, which is identical to cocaine, identical to religious ecstasy. All of these things have a similar drug-like effect on the way the brain interprets that happy moment or that moment that of pleasure from getting that message. So the phones are designed to keep you that way. So I think the best thing to do is to take regular schedule intervals where you do not take your phone with you. Leave the phone home, go out without it, get into nature, like literally, you know, go out into nature and experience the sun, the grass, take your shoes off, like let the earth actually touch your feet. There's, you know, a form of like metaphysical circuitry that takes place when your feet are actually touching the planet Earth, not through the rubberized shoes that we wear and not on concrete, because concrete is artificial. But when you're actually in touch with nature, these things transform you on a cellular level. And it can heal you from addiction because you're not bringing the phone with you. So you're not worrying about, let me hurry up and check and see if I have a red blurb that says I got a message from somebody on one of the social media networks or whatever. So just take that time as regularly as you can. Yeah, take that time as regularly as you can to just really just get rid of technology and just experience life as a...
And make your children do it.
Yes, oh, without question.
Make the children do it.
Yeah, and just give them the experience of just being a human being without the accoutrements of modernity. These things are presented to us as beneficial, which they can be if used properly and in correct moderation, but we're in a society that's designed to keep us strung out, because the more strung out we are, we're not able to pay attention to what's really happening and what's being done to us. So it's just something that we need to really, really, really start being serious about, because the addiction is really real. It's not a game. It's nothing to play with, because if you do become addicted, the levels to which one will go to satisfy that addiction is no different than a crackhead or a coke addict or any other substance abuser. It's the same sort of response that's compelling
addiction.
You to continue to do those things. So just do that, and I guarantee you this should help you and help improve even your relationships. Because a lot of our relationships have deteriorated because we isolate ourselves with these devices. And human beings on a genetic level are social creatures. We're not meant to be isolated from each other like that. So it's something to really take into consideration, just as far as cultivating a life that is optimal for you, as far as your mental health, your spiritual health, and your familial health. That's my thing. So the next one I wanted to touch on is from businessinsider.com. A troubling link has been found. Excuse me. The screen is acting a little bit flighty. Let me go back. Okay, there we go. I got it. A troubling link has been found between a cutting-edge gene editing technology and cancer, and it's sending biotech stocks crashing. Two independent studies by Novartis and Karolinska Institute showed that CRISPR-Cas9 may increase the risk for cancer by disrupting the function of the essential P53 DNA repair protein. CRISPR therapeutic stock was down 15.3% Monday morning, while Editas and Intellia, two other companies developing CRISPR-related therapies, dropped 7% and 8% respectively. So basically they're finding that the gene editing is actually damaging the P53 DNA repair protein, and that protein is one that is a cancer preventative DNA molecule. And as a result, it is causing cancer. So there it is again, something I say, the Hegelian dialectic. They create something, they claim it's for beneficial reasons, they put it into use without any checks or balances. All of a sudden, when people start dying off, wow, we figured out something's wrong with this technology. Now we have to work on fixing the problem we started, which was actually created to try and fix the original problem in the first place. Self-fulfilling prophecy of stupidity, we get wrapped up in it, and we end up being victims of these types of experiments, especially black people, because they always choose to experiment on us first. I remember some of the first CRISPR-authorized therapies were practiced on non-white black people, black children, that had specific types of illnesses. This was probably over a year ago we had talked about that. And, you know, I was totally distrustful of the technology then. So here we go, the Hegelian dialectic. They're saying there's something majorly wrong with it that's causing people to get cancer. Just be careful with that stuff, those who might be thinking of utilizing it. Another thing, too, is LASIK. LASIK, they're finding, is causing all kinds of damage to people's vision to the point where it's causing them to even commit suicide or feel suicidal because it's causing them to see double. They're getting spots. They just have all of these byproduct issues that are literally causing them to become depressed, and in some cases, some of them become suicidal because they just cannot stand having their vision damaged to the point that LASIK has damaged it before they went into LASIK. And it's funny because before I found out just how bad my eyes were and that I couldn't actually get LASIK, I was considering it many years ago because at the time I thought it was safe based on the things that I, you know, heard at that time. So I'm really glad that it worked out that way because I probably might be one of those people. Go ahead, what are you saying, Jenna? I'm sorry.
I done met so many people that done had LASIK and they wear glasses still.
Wow. It's not a game. Like, correct. Yeah, and it's the thing to remember is your vision is a one-time thing. If they screw up once, you might never see again, or you might just have, you know, these permanent issues that you can never shake, and it might be something that's unbearable for you. So it might be better to get the glasses or get the contacts or there was some natural remedy if it's something to do with blood pressure and, you know, eye pressure, excuse me, intraocular pressure, as it's called medically speaking, than actually dealing with these surgeries because, again, you know, and I posted the article on DTR Community, not in this particular thread, but it goes in depth into the damage and the psychological damage to the people who've had the surgery done and are dealing with the horrific byproducts of having their vision permanently damaged. And they'll tell some of these people, oh, you know, it's temporary, and then 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, the same problem's there, or it's even gotten worse. So you just want to be careful. So the next one is, this was about myrrh oil, and this one, Wake Up World. Now, myrrh oil is so many properties to it, and Dave and I have talked about it on Tando before, but never really went into depth. So this one is called Myrrh Oil, the Health Benefits of This Holy Oil. You may have heard of myrrh from biblical stories as one of the precious gifts together with gold and frankincense offered by the three wise men to the newborn Jesus. This valuable element actually has a long history of use, especially in ancient civilizations. Today, myrrh is most commonly known and used as an essential oil. Keep on reading to learn more about its many benefits. So it actually is native to Somalia, Ethiopia, Kenya, Oman, Arabia, and Yemen, and the tree grows to up to 2 meters or 6.5 feet high. And it just goes into some of the actual history of it, the fact that it's mentioned in the Ebers Papyrus, one of the oldest Nile Valley medical texts, which dates back to 1550 BC. And, myrrh oil and resin have both had a long history of medicinal use and are valued for their wound healing properties. Egyptians use myrrh to treat hay fever and real herpes. The essential oil is also traditionally used to enhance emotional and spiritual well-being. Maintaining healthy skin is also one of myrrh's renowned uses, as it helps restore the health of skin cells to help minimize the appearance of wrinkles. It also has antibacterial properties that make it helpful against skin conditions like acne, eczema, and athlete's foot, to name a few. This is why it is commonly added to many skincare products today. Myrrh oil is used for adding fragrance to perfumes, embalming, flavoring food products. Myrrh oil is also valuable aromatherapy oil that can be used for massages, mixed in bath water, or applied on the skin. You can also use it as a mouthwash to eliminate dental infections. Put it in a cold compress to help ease inflammation. Dilute it with a safe carrier oil and use it to promote the healing of wounds or ulcers. The composition of myrrh oil. There are many health-enhancing compounds in myrrh oil, such as terpenoids, a class of chemicals with inflammation-fighting and antioxidant effects. It also contains up to 75% sequiterpenes, which are compounds that can affect certain parts of your brain, particularly your hypothalamus, pituitary, and amygdala. These brain regions play an integral role in controlling your emotions and response to hormones in your body. Other components of myrrh include alpha-longapinene, beta-catenine, eugenol, esters, cumaric, aldehyde, acetic acid, and formic acid. Some of the benefits of myrrh oil can be attributed to its powerful antioxidant, antifungal, antiviral, anti-inflammatory, antiparasitic, expectorant, and antispasmodic properties. According to the book The Essential Oils Complete Reference Guide, it can also help with many health conditions such as respiratory problems. Myrrh oil works well against coughs, colds, and sore throat. It also helps relieve congestion and to expel phlegm. That's what an expectorant does. Digestive ailments. It promotes digestive health and helps ease stomach upset, dyspepsia, diarrhea, indigestion, hemorrhoids, and flatulence, which is passing gas. Mouth and gum disease. It helps relieve toothache, gingivitis, and mouth ulcers, and also freshens your breath. Myrrh oil is even used as a natural ingredient in mouthwashes and toothpaste. Immune system health. A 2010 study published in the Food and Chemical Toxicology Journal found that an emulsion made from myrrh may help protect against lead-induced hypotoxicity, oxidative stress, and immune toxicity among animal test subjects. So, they even says here, a study conducted by Chinese researchers published in the April 2011 issue of the Journal of Medicinal Plant Research also found that extracts made from myrrh resin may be effective against human gynecologic cancer cells. So it also goes into the way the oil works on a scientific level, but myrrh oil is something that everyone should have, especially going into a prepping situation, because it can come in handy for a myriad of different illnesses, as the article that I just got into was talking about. So that is extremely important, I think, for us to know about. The next one is from theconversation.com. It's entitled Triclosan, a common, and I talked about this before, but I like that this kind of goes into it. Triclosan, a common antimicrobial in toothpaste and other products like hand sanitizer, is linked to inflammation and cancer in the gut. The antimicrobial chemical triclosan is in thousands of products that we use daily: hand soaps, toothpaste, body wash, kitchenware, and even some toys. Work in our lab suggests that this compound may have widespread health risks, including aggravating inflammation in the gut and promoting the development of colon cancer by altering the gut microbiota, the community of microbes found in our intestines. So we've been talking about gut health and the connection of gut health to brain health. This is also dealing with the fact that it can facilitate, not having proper gut health can facilitate intestinal cancer. And that triclosan, something that most people brush their teeth with every day, is a major contributor to that by destroying the microbiotic system within the intestines. Now, there's another article that kind of coincides with this from Natural Blaze, and it's entitled Eat Mangoes for Gut Health Study Revealed. Next time you suffer from constipation, you may want to consider grabbing a mango instead of reaching for a fiber supplement, suggests a new Texas A&M University pilot study published in the peer-reviewed journal Molecular Nutrition and Food Research. Mangoes may very well be the king of all fruits. So basically, the mango is able to facilitate balancing and facilitating the proper gut microbes. And those gut microbes, the good bacteria that's in your gut, in your stomach, and in your intestinal lining, is something that can help prevent things like Alzheimer's. It also has an effect on ADHD, autism, Parkinson's disease. It's the origin of Parkinson's disease, is bad gut bacteria, and certain types of cancers, as the other article was just discussing. So those who may not want to eat, take Netamucil and all that nasty stuff with fiber, get yourself some mangoes and tear them up, and you'll be able to restore your gut health and also get your proper fiber in. And I would say to get into natural toothpaste, so you're not partaking of the chemical-laced toothpaste that we're used to, that all include triclosan, which is deadly to our physical health. The next one, did you have something you want to say, Jenna?
We have a caller.
Oh, cool. I'm not looking at the board, so yeah, let's bring him in.
Area code 813. What's your name? Where you calling from?
My name is Vila Okonkwo. I'm calling out of Indianapolis, Indiana.
Peace. Peace and love. How you doing?
I'm fine. Right. I guess I'm relatively new to this platform, and I'm not sure, you know, how it goes. Is it like, I don't know, someone chooses a topic to speak on, or... So someone does some research with articles or something. Well, how did this go?
Yes. Before we get into tonight's show, which is, I just lost my train of thought. It's Let me get up here. My apologies. When you know better, you do better. Sometimes. The lesser of two evils is still evil. That's the name of this. We was getting into, last week we went into mulattoes, quote unquote, and should we separate from the mixed race children? Tonight we was going further into that. We talked about that specifically, about shunning of a separation. And tonight we're going to ask the question, what would happen to those children and how will they grow up? And my brother Roz was going through a couple of articles that he thought was important for us to note, maybe for some preventive maintenance for you and your family. You know, all of this stuff, if you're interested in taking care of yourself minus the chemicals, you know, you would look into these articles. He was talking about the myrrh oil. That's preventive maintenance with your children and with yourself, with the cell phone addiction. You know, a lot of us don't even recognize that's what's going on. So if you would just put those things to the side and just watch how your children interact with you, or you with your spouse, sibling, or what have you. You know, and these are the things that we never even think about. So these are things that we believe our family should know and be able to be aware that you have this particular disease and don't even know about it because you've never heard of it. So that's what some of these articles that he was talking about. But did you have something that they caught you about some of those articles?
I am more now into natural health things than I am so medicine. For years,
You knew about that myrrh oil?
I've heard of it as an essential oil. Yeah, I know it's biblical. So anything biblical in relation, you know, to the oils, go back, you know, centuries and have been used for centuries. And so I believe in them. Yes. So I do know about the myrrh. Yeah.
Okay.
And I've been, as I said, in the mental health system for most of my life. And I finally disengaged from that. It's been over 10 years ago. And, you know, with the different medicines they give you, and basically that's what they push for you. That's what the mental health system is all about. Getting people to get on these drugs, and I'm sure somebody gets some help from them, and there may be some side effects, but they're forever, you know, doing research and coming up with these, say, better drugs, you know, for people to take.
Well, see, and that's the whole point. That's the whole point of those articles, ma'am, so that you could learn what you could take naturally. And that way, you could kind of ease your way off of those meds. But
well, again, as I said, in my personal situation, I have been weeded off of those for some time now, and I have no desire to go back.
Great.
Even though they say, oh, you know, we have new improved, but I don't believe in that for myself. And even when you try some of the natural supplements, depending on what they are, you need to be under the care of a natural holistic physician or doctor, because there's certain ones that you can kind of use together, and others you need to be aware not to use with one or the other. And I found that out by trial and error. So basically, I stay away from the holistic doctors, you know, the psychologists and all those people with the brain, messing with the brain. And I just believe, you know, that if I can just stay on the natural path that I'm on, come to terms with my own mental health, because, yeah, a lot of it, the mental health issues may be generational or hereditary, and some come upon us because of our own ways in which we deal with our life. So you have to kind of have a mindset.
We finna slide on over, because what you just said, the mental illness that we bring upon ourselves, we're going to speak a little bit more on that on the other side of the hour right now. Scotty, if you could you play that first video that I put up there, please, at the very top of the chat?
Oh, well, you don't put yourself in a position where, you know, you minimize the contacts that you make so that matter of trust doesn't come up. That's another movie I look at all the time. It's an old movie, and it's considered the second greatest movie ever made. A lot of people say they don't see how that ever came to be, but I can see how it came to be. It's called Casablanca, with Humphrey Bogart playing the part of a character called Rick Blaine. Now, I say that everybody should be codified, and I use, and people can look at the movie and just watch the way that Rick Blaine, the cafe owner in that movie, Casablanca, goes about doing things.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, he doesn't really trust anybody because he knows that he's not in a position where people can be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
See, in the system of white supremacy, you just make do, really. You're in a prison system. So what do you do in a prison system? Whom can you trust in a prison system? And you look at the whole world as a prison. You look at the system of white supremacy as a prison. So whom can you trust in the prison? Well, you minimize putting yourself in a position where you have to trust anybody, even though you know you have to trust quite a few people. You have to trust the person, you know, who serves you in the mess hall and in the kitchen and whatnot. You have to trust that the people are, you know, not poisoning the food and all like that. As in the movie, a prison movie, Shawshank Redemption, Andy Dufresne went to lunch. His first lunch had a worm in it. I mean, you know, and so, hey, prison conditions, I mean, you just might have worms in your food. Or poison, and a lot of the food is poisoned in the system of white supremacy deliberately. And a lot of things that are called food isn't really even food.
Yes, sir.
It's just a lot of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And you're eating plastic. But whom do you trust? So you have to trust people because you're in a prison system. But you minimize putting yourself in a position where you extend your situation where the trust, you have to trust more and more and more people. Going back to the movie, here again, Casablanca, Rick Blaine knew that everybody who approached him had some type of game. People who were supposed to be friends, people who he knew were declared enemies. But he couldn't really trust anybody, even though he had to trust quite a few people. But he only did it when he had to. And so in answer to your question, in the system of white supremacy, you only do it when you absolutely have to, because you're going to have to trust somebody. whatever people are going to be the attendants to you.
Yeah.
You trust that when they put that needle in your arm that they're putting in the correct substance, that they're not getting you addicted to something or something like that. You trust that. You don't have any idea what this is.
Mm-hmm.
See, and somebody who has it in for you can very easily switch syringes or whatnot.
Yes.
And ruin your entire existence.
Yes.
All right? So, but this is the way you do it.
You get... You get that next one for me too. Well, hold on, because I want to hit on some points on that. Talking about these children, everybody may not think like that, but a lot of us have, at least where I come from, a lot of us felt that way. As far as we couldn't trust nobody. And then you have other people who project that same thing onto other people. Now, how do you expect someone to react when you get beaten down mentally in that manner? That's just something for everybody to think about. Unless you got something you wanted to add, Brother Rise, or Brother Scotty, before we get to this next one.
I did. I've talked about vetting people that you deal with and being very cognizant of their character, because the character of a person really sets the trajectory of the quality of that relationship. And one thing that I found throughout my life experience and just studying how people behave and human interaction, that's something that I actually study, body language, all kinds of stuff. One thing I find is that if you find a person has a certain character flaw in the way that they function on a moral level, that it usually permeates all areas of people activity, you'll find some semblance of that character flaw express itself in some form or fashion. When a person really strives for balance and correct action, thought, speech, and action, then you tend to find that in all areas of people activity. I'm not saying that people are perfect, but you will find that people who are like that, those character traits permeate all areas of people activity. So just as balanced and equitable as they are in, let's say, friendship, they would be on a personal relationship with a female that they're with or that they love or whatever the case may be. and that's just an example. So to me, I totally understand that, because when I began to understand that we were in a prison, I was probably about 12 or 13. And at that point, I had a rage in me that was just palpable. So that was really the very, very beginning of me starting to get into street life. And it was more kind of like the Tupac, but he had tatted on his stomach, the hate you give little infants F everybody. That was like my philosophy without me knowing I had that philosophy, but it was all of just the things that I couldn't stand about my life at home, I took out on people in the street. And it started then when I started to realize that, hey, this is what it means to be black in this country, that your life ain't worth nothing. And, you know, if you die, no one really cares except the people who care about you. So, I totally understand what he's saying. I just think that with people you deal with, you just have to vet them. And the linchpin in the quality of any relationship is the character of the person. In Yoruba, that's known as Iwapele, 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 good character. That's what that means. And if you have good character, you find that it permeates all areas of people activity and those kinds of people. And that's all I have to say. I don't know if Scotty wanted to contribute something.
Yeah, Brother Scotty, go ahead.
Yeah, on the issue of trust, I have to think about two different levels of trust. I completely understand, and it is accurate to say, when I go to the doctor, I'm trusting that this dude didn't cheat his way through medical school and actually know how to do the medical procedures that they may say need to be done on me. Or I trust, as he said, that this person read the label of the bottle that they pulled whatever they getting ready to inject me with to make sure is what the doctor prescribed. I'm talking about the nurse. Make sure she read, you know, can read and do, you know. So, yeah, that's a level of trust. Trusting when I go to a restaurant that the chef didn't spit in my food. So that's a level of trust. Those are things that we are trusting that these people that we're interacting with that we don't know are not meaning to do us any harm. We're trusting. That's sort of like a forced trust. But then there's another level of trust. There's the trust that is built up through relationships over time. And that could be, you know, I'm going to trust my mother because I've known her all her life or all my life. And I know what type of person she is. I know whether she will follow through on her word or not. So I know that's a different level of trust. I've trusted this person because my trust is based on, you know, a length of time of interactions with this person. So we develop a level of trust. But also outside of those personal relationships where we're talking about information, I trust that this person that's telling me this, let's say, for example, let's use the people activity area of law. I trust that this person who is telling me that black codes were only applied to people who called themselves black, body oppressors, the U.S. government, state government, local government. You know, when a person tells me that, I'm trusting that he know what he's talking about. I'm trusting that he did the research. But when it comes to information, I trust no one. I don't trust anyone. I don't care if you got a doctor before your name, a PhD after it. I don't care if the university has given you a degree and as an expert in this, that, or the other. I still need to double check on the information that you've given me. I want to find it in multiple sources. I want to see if there is a dissenting opinion. So that's why I try to tell people, when you get into radio broadcasting, this is what we're doing. When you get into podcasting, people are trusting you. People are tuning in, that have tuned in, are placed in their trust that you know what you're talking about, that you did your due diligence and did the research. And you're not just giving them repeated talking points you heard somebody else say, but you didn't verify to see if the information was correct. So, you know, I just want to acknowledge those areas of trust. We're talking about two different types of trust and the different areas where trust may impact us individually.
Sometimes you don't have no decision but to trust, like you were saying with them doctors.
I would call that automatic trust based on correspondence, because like Scotty said, if you're dealing with some life or death thing, you know, and you have to have surgery done, you're going to, you know, trust that that doctor has the proper credentials, has done the surgery before, and knows which organ they're taking out. I mean, I've even seen stories where people have had their good lung taken out instead of the cancerous one when they went under the knife. And, you know, I mean, and it's actually happened. I've worked in the medical field. There's stories I've heard that are just incredible. And, you know, that's one of the things I always have propagated once I was able to really hear this brilliant sister on the cows, Dr. Vanilia Randall. She has a book, I believe it's called Dying While Black or something like that. But it basically deals with the health system and how black people can facilitate trying to have the safest experience possible in the hospital. And one thing she advocates is when you have to go to the hospital, you always go with someone who is lucid, who cares about your well-being, and someone who will ask questions. Because if you're not feeling well, you basically do what you're told. You don't feel well. So whatever they tell you, you assume it's going to help you feel better, so you do it on autopilot. Whereas the person who's there can ask the proper questions to determine, is that the proper course you want to take, you should be taking with this person? And how just people asking the proper questions can save a life just by asking the right questions.
Well, look, let me add on to that question lane, man, because that's what I like to do. Like Brother Scott was saying, people that tune in, they trust what we're saying. And what I like to do is go look into that information first. And one thing that some of y'all probably wouldn't do, but the fact of the matter is, if you live in a place like I live, you run into slave catchers at the grocery store sometimes as security. If you want to know something about some of these things that you hear, as far as dealing with law and what have you, ask the slave catcher why they at work. Not when they come to get you. Ask them then. You pass them by anyway and just see what they say. You know what I mean? But right now, we're getting ready to go to this break. And we're going to come right to you, sister. Right after this break. You are listening to Real Life, the radio show. We'll be back right after this commercial break.
Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Welcome back to Real Life. I am your host, Jenna, along here with my brother, Rise. And we going, before we get into the meat of the show, sister, you was ready? You had something you wanted to add?
Yeah, in regards to the conversation on trust. I don't know, maybe it's inbred into my psyche or something, but I automatically question people. I've always been the only, I've been the one who's going to ask questions, okay? So it's a story in concerning my personal health. I was diagnosed with a tumor. It's been, I don't know, years ago, I believe, when I was first diagnosed, maybe over 10 years ago. And I went to a doctor, ear doctor, because I'd gone to ear, nose, and throat, because I have sinus and all. And then they said, well, you know, they take, x-rays or something, and then they saw something, you know, in my brain there. And they said, we're going to send you over to the, I went to ear, nose, and throat, and then they sent me to the ear doctor. No, the ear doctor sent me to the ear, nose, and throat, because he said he was testing my hearing, and he yelled as loud as he could when I was in his little, you know, soundproof booth. I believe that's what it is. And he said I didn't respond. So he sent me to the ear, nose, and throat. They took the x-ray, and they found the tumor. And they recommended, you know, neurosurgery. And I went to see a neurosurgeon, and they're supposed to be, you know, tight, top flight, you know, and they're sealed and so forth and so on.
Yeah, that's what
they're
going to tell you.
And they kept trying to convince me to get an operation. Oh, we're going to, you know, have all the safety procedures, and you're going to be fine. You're going to come out of that, and you're going to remove
now,
the tumor.
How long ago
now,
this
was about 7 years ago when I was in Chicago. And y'all listened.
About 7 years.
You know, and he, 7 years ago.
Did you say 7 years ago?
7 years ago, yes. And okay. I listened to what they had to say and explained the procedure and the recovery and what to expect and blah, blah, blah. But in the back of my mind, I was saying, you're not going in my brain. You're not going to get in my brain. Because for the most part, they want, you know, to have experience. They have to be constantly getting their experience through.
They want to practice on you. They want to practice on you. But did you have a surgery?
Of course I did not have the surgery, because no matter what he said, I know I'm not going to come back and let them cut me open.
Okay.
Because once they cut you open,
What did you do to correct the tumor?
Well, I always basically knew that,
you
had to have a second opinion. You have to have options. So I always search for the second opinion. And when I got to Indianapolis, they said, well, we can do a, laser surgery. They use a laser that focuses directly on that tumor.
Right.
And I got that done 2 years ago. And my last follow-up, not my last follow-up, I think my first follow-up was last year. And they said the tumor was basically, you know, doing what, I mean, the laser surgery was doing what it was supposed to do. I go back for my second follow-up, I think in September. But it's just that, I've heard about hospitals and how more people die from infections in the hospital than from the procedure that they get. And, you know, you have to go through all this recovery stage and be in a hospital and rack up all these bills, you know, for the surgeries. So I just never even considered that, going into a hospital. And I hope to God I never have to go into a hospital. I've been in a hospital since I was a child. And I hope to God I never go in there. Because there's just too many people that are dying, you know, from something other than what they went in for.
Absolutely.
So
yep.
The trust for me is just not there when it comes to my body. in my mind is just not there, you know. I'd rather, you know, deal with my own as much as I possibly can. And if it comes to the extreme, well, I will go to a doctor. I will go to a doctor.
Ma'am, I hope these articles and things you was writing those down so you could continue on with that preventive maintenance, because that's what this is here for. But right now we're gonna go back into this this next video, Brother Scotty, if you will.
Yes, if we become known to be, you're talking about the black people that you know, we used to make jokes about, and, you know, and buffoons and carrying on foolishness and worshiping foolishness and whatnot. Oh, no, that's the way they were a few years ago.
That's right.
No, they have completely changed. They are known as the world's problem solvers. They are no longer known as the famous world problem makers. They have about, you know, 24/7. I mean, they are just looking for ways to solve problems all the time in the most constructive manner, with the most constructive results. That's how they think. That's how they act. I mean, that's just a part of them. It has been the new black culture, problem solving, nothing else, and having fun doing it. They're having fun doing it. They're not taking away the fun. I mean, it's just a joyous thing. I mean, you know, solve one problem right after another, and don't engage in anything that's not about problem solving in all areas of activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Yeah, solving problems through sex, having the correct type of sex that's beneficial to everybody and joyous. I mean, not going to have some ugly results like it does now. Mm-hmm. All right? Now, just think of that, a whole new world, and we can do it in just starting right this minute. All we have to do is just get in that frame of mind. Nothing non-constructive from now on. No non-constructive conversation. No got to have a whole bunch of swear words in everything that we say, thinking that that's somehow accomplishing something. I mean, just get rid of that childish nonsense. Because it is childish. It's infantile. And it's stupid. I mean, you know, just glorifying stupidity. Stupidity is stupidity. So you glorify it.
Yeah.
But we have been taught to glorify anything that makes no sense at all. If it makes no sense, call the black people, because they love it.
Wow.
Just go down and get a crowd of black people and say, we got a bunch of nonsense going on over here. And I know that you all have been trained to be a part of anything that makes no sense at all.
Wow.
And turn and put that on a loudspeaker, and the black people look around. Oh, nonsense! You got nonsense going on down the block. Let's get down there right quick before it goes away. We got to get a piece of that action.
Yeah, wow.
Something that doesn't make sense. Oh boy, we got to help, because we black folks. That's what we are about. Anything that's stupid, that's us.
Yeah, Brother Scotty, that's what people see, though. That's what people see. And then we start repeating it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I wanted to play those because it goes directly into what's being proposed as far as separating from these so-called mulattoes and mixed race. Brother Ross was talking about that. We start doing that and having our children doing that to other children, you creating that whole new race that Brother Ross was talking about on Tando earlier. That replacement of white supremacy, that's what you're creating right now with the rhetoric that's being spilled. What you think about that, Brother Ross?
I just think it's absolutely correct.
Hold on, Brother Ross. Let me get what Brother Scotty, you go ahead and say it.
Please do.
Yeah, fellas. Going to what Mr. Fuller talked about, and I don't want to say he's assuming, because then I'm making an assumption. And something an old drill sergeant told me just really stuck with me is that we make an ass out of ourselves and the other person when we assume things. So with that said, I think Mr. Fuller is assuming that if we engaged in correct behavior, the enemy media, and I mean the white supremacist-dominated media, which they control 95% of what the world sees, all forms of media, and that they would accurately portray us, and they would not. If the goal is anti-blackness, if the goal is to get the rest of the world to not feel sympathy or empathy for what the black man and woman and child is going through behind the enemy lines of the United States, we're assuming that if we do everything correctly, that, you know, they're going to portray us in a positive light. And a great example, I've been battling this stereotype on black men for quite some time. And I really got personally involved in it when I became a divorced black father, raising, you know, two daughters in the house, and then a third later, you know, who wasn't in my household but was frequently in my household, if you know what I'm saying. But anyway, you know, we've heard this thing about, oh, black fathers aren't contributing with the missing black father. But when even the United States government through the CDC, as well as some other universities,
conducted... Hey, Scotty, you going in and out, Scotty.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you caught that, because I was going to say the same thing.
Okay. What part did you last hear?
When you were saying that you had your daughters with you, almost shortly after you talked about the third daughters when you went out.
Yeah, so what I was saying is I got personally invested in exposing this myth, because when I became a single, divorced black father, I came in contact with other brothers who were either in the same category as I was, or they were fighting for their children to get custody of their children, whether it was full custody or co-parenting, you know, joint custody.
Yeah, as I had they to say. Fight for partial.
Right. So I knew that every time in the media when they started talking about the absent black father, oh, if only we could solve the problem of the missing fathers. And I knew based on the CDC study as well as other university studies that in America, in the United States, black men are more involved in their children's lives than any other group. They're followed by Hispanics and then white men. For some reason, they didn't include Asians. It was white men, black men, and Hispanics. And white men did the worst of all. And this was regardless of whether the father was married to the mother or not. That had no bearing on if he lived in a different household, how much time he spent. So that's a myth, that no matter how great the majority, the data shows the majorities of black fathers are, we still battling this myth that we're just largely absent. So that's what I'm saying. We shouldn't assume. And I do share his concern, because he's talking about that subculture to black culture, that subculture called hip-hop or called rap that has been perverted by those from outside using those inside to pervert that culture. That if you just watch these rap videos, the majority of these rap videos that the mainstream media puts out, it will portray us as being engaged in a bunch of foolishness and negative behavior. And that's the image that's projected to the world, to where everybody else, oh, that's a black man. Black men are thugs. Black men like to shoot people. Black men sell drugs. Black men abandon their children. That's what's getting put out through the media that he's talking about. Mm. That's all.
You are correct.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because you reminded me of a video that I watched of a Nigerian American who said that her parents didn't like black Americans. And when she talked about why, she asked them, well, hey, what's the problem? And basically they said that everything that what you said is what they said to her, that we're always involved in negativity. We're not respectful. You know, we're violent. We're dangerous.
And a lot of foreigners get infused with that sort of stuff before they get here. I know, like, now, and it's been like this for a number of years in Trinidad, we had access to a lot of the cable channels that you guys get up here. So when you have the news saying all of these things that are going on here, we're getting it in the islands before we come here. Then, in some cases, they'll even actually pull foreigners to the side and actually have these little rooms where they talk to them about how to be safe in the country. And some of the stuff that they put out there is that, you know, Black Americans are the ones that you need to be careful of because, you know, they're always doing this, that, and the third. And it's just not, it's just something that that facilitates that dissension. And that's one of the reasons I always say that if we have a foreigner coming here, they're just trying to get their basic understanding of the new environment, possibly a new language for them, all of these things. I think that if we are able to, we should take those steps to try and help them get acclimated, but also teach them about what life is like here. If a person is coming from the continent, they're going to have a tribal understanding. This is the ethnic group I come from. They don't have the black-white dynamic that we have here, so they would have to be taught about that. So they understand that this is how you're going to be viewed, and this is how these people who are called black by the dominant colonizers are treated. This is stuff that we can do to help them, and then we might get allies that we can utilize that are now here, you know, might have their citizenship on lockdown, so it's not like they're going to get deported, and they can be involved in helping us facilitate, you know, the things we need to do here first for the benefit of the original black people who've been here doing all the work to set the stage for them to come here on a plane and not a slave ship, and then for those other people who have come here from other places. That's just the right way of focusing, I think, rather than being divisive and saying, well, they're coming here to take this, that, and the third. There's nothing that a foreigner's taking from you. It is what is being given to them by the people who control everything. It's a wrong state of perception. They're not taking anything. The white supremacists are giving these things to these people and slighting you. And because they come from a place that's probably hell on earth as far as just some of the things they experience, the governmental terror, the local gang terror, whatever it is that's going on. So when they get here, any little thing that can help them, they're going to latch onto it. They don't understand the context. All they see is benefit, something that can help me. When I come from a place where I get no help, I'm going to take it. But if we're able to talk to them and help them understand, well, you know, when you're taking this, it's taken away from that. And as a result, we're in the situation where we're impoverished. We don't have access to resources because those resources are being squandered. Not that you shouldn't get help too, but the truth is we've been suffering here intergenerationally in a way that you don't understand because this is the way that the system of white supremacy works here. When people understand that, most people's natural inclination is to want to make things right. So let's stop assuming the worst, because xenophobia is a white supremacist attitude. That is why the system exists. They're xenophobic about their genetic annihilation. So nothing else that doesn't look like them can come into their genetic mix unless they allow it to, for whatever purposes that they choose to do so. So that's my take on it. I don't know if anyone else has anything else to say.
No, we're just going to transition that right into, because we was talking about how we treat these children.
Yes.
And for instance, you were just talking about the immigrants, right? Mm-hmm. And it's because of the political party that's going on. We have a lot of them coming.
Right.
I'm saying them same people. Now, if you're going to separate from them, like you stated earlier, then once they do get in power,
yep,
then it's over for us all over again.
And the difference
and people don't understand, because remember, you still have to vote, especially your local elections.
Mm-hmm.
But some people don't believe in that either.
And we can't even get people to agree on what the problem is. So imagine trying to get us to coalesce around politics. We're arguing about some of the most frivolous, nonsensical things, you know, that can possibly be focused on when we're being attacked and mistreated like we are. But those are the things we choose to focus on. And if
but that's the reason to bring it up too, though. That's the exact reason that it needs to be brought up.
I agree.
To continue to reintroduce it into the conversation. But go ahead, my brother.
Oh no, I was just saying that you know, we have to start coalescing around what the problem is, and just facilitate making codes that work for us as a people. Certain codes of respect that we utilize all the time. Anytime we're in the presence of another person that looks like us, even if the person doesn't have, let's say, any affinity for other black people, that's fine too. VGQ, it's not a problem. You know, if I see a person and I speak to them and say good afternoon or good evening, and you know, they turn their nose up, okay, no problem. You know, they might have had a rough day. I'm not going to sit there and take it personal. You know, I just keep it moving. And that's the thing. I think we've been trained to take too many things personal. We got a lot of us are suffering, and we may not say it. We may always say, "Oh, I'm fine." That's always our first inclination when we having conversations with people. How you doing? I'm fine. But the reality is, a lot of us are suffering in ways that we just don't choose to talk about publicly or with other people. And to me, there's just always has to be room for, you know, another person to just have an off day. That's pretty much what it is. You entitled to that, because I have off days too. Now, I'm not nasty to people. You know, I'm much more mature now, so I don't have that kind of aggressive countenance. But I mean, we all have bad days, and you have to be allowed that, and just keep it moving. You know, you might see the person another day, and then they're extra friendly because they realize, like, darn, I was real nasty to the brother. He just said good evening or good afternoon. You know, next time you see him, they speak to you first. Hey, how you doing? Like, hey, I'm good. How you doing? That's it. And you keep it moving. You know, it's just interesting to me. I just think that the way that I've come to my understanding of the system, I truly, truly understand on a deep level that we go through a lot. And I really try not to hold anyone to any high level of judgment, even if it's in passing. I just let people be who they are, and I take them as they come. Now, that to me is the best way to just, you know, avoid conflict with people. And that's it. That's one of my own tactics. You know what I'm saying?
Go back to one of the favorites, huh? Minimize conflict, minimize contact, and minimize conflict. I personally, just over here in the chat is real nice. I would like to know, what is Cosmic Race? I have not read that book, and I see Brother Scotty know something about it. Could y'all brothers elaborate on that, please?
Oh yeah,
yeah. I'll post a link to the book that Brother Rio mentioned in there, called Cosmic Race. All right, and this applies to the philosophy of La Raza that was came up with by a Mexican philosopher. Also, worked in the area of education. He was also a 1929 presidential candidate. I'm not even going to try to pronounce Jose's name and what have you, but I've been aware of La Raza for about 10 years now, and La Raza means race first. Just like we hear some black people tag some of my videos, when I stand up for black people, they tag it black first. That's what La Raza means. It means that these Mezo Indians who were here before these colonizers got here, and they are responding, in my opinion, incorrectly to racism, white supremacy, to that they don't see themselves as being in the same position and being oppressed by the same people as other non-Mexican or non-Mezo Mezo-Indian descent. Okay, they're separating themselves off, and I mean, some of their grievances are real. You know, California didn't belong to the United States. New Mexico, Texas, we know how the white supremacists took those lands from them. So it's not like they don't have a grievance and what have you, but when their grievance against what was done to them by white people, and yes, unfortunately, some black soldiers played a role in that, it's still incorrect based off of what those people did to then apply these stereotypes to everybody else. You know what I'm saying? So they're responding to racism, white supremacy in an incorrect fashion by then promoting Mexican supremacy or Hispanic supremacy. But we shouldn't assume that the millions upon millions of people who fall into their classification subscribe to that ideology.
Yes, I'm familiar with that too. Absolutely. That's kind of what's fueling what's being called ethnic cleansing of certain black areas on the West Coast, is that particular mentality. And like I said before, that really started in jail. When you in jail, that is how the jail breaks up. It segregates by Aryans going with Aryans, so all the white people become Aryans or are affiliated loosely with the Aryan name. And La Eme and all the other Latino gangs, the Norteños, the Sureños, all of them, they deal with them. Then the black people is either 5%ers, Crips and Bloods, or variants of the Crips and Bloods and Gangster Disciples and all the other gangs you can name. And that's just how it is. And like
Otis said, Hold on, Brother Ross, because we're getting ready to go into this. Can we go ahead on and go to the first break early, Brother Scotty?
Yeah.
I want to see what Brother Rio point was for bringing that up.
Let me say it is to Brother Ross about the prisons. Yes, Brother Ross, that is where a lot of divisions took place and still take place. Of course, people are going to gravitate towards people who look like them. That's just natural. Zebras don't gravitate towards giraffes. Giraffes don't gravitate towards elephants. This is natural behavior, but the colonial slave master has mastered exploiting the differences between his victims and playing the victims against each other. But I would also say that during the revolutionary period of black power in this country, we also saw some solidarity among those races inside of the prisons. You're up there in New York where the Attica prison riots took place, and these were the prisoners versus the system, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that. May he rest in power. He was just murdered by some white supremacists in prison. What was his nickname? But it's Hugo Yogi Pinero, something like that. Hugo Pinero, okay. A political prisoner, Hispanic, although he looked like he got an Afro, so there's some African genes in him too. But he was Hispanic, and he unified with people like George Jackson, Jonathan Jackson, the Soledad brothers. So so we have seen the flip side of that, where being under those oppressive conditions have forced people to work together and find a common ground in fighting a common oppressor.
You are correct.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend. Hold on. Go ahead, Brother Rio. Let me see what you now I don't want you to get cut off. Brother Scotty, go ahead, because I was going to ask you to do that. Go ahead on, play the commercial early, if you will. You're listening to Real Life, the radio show. We'll be back after these quick messages.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Welcome back to Real Life, the radio show. We got Brother Rio. Let us know, what was the purpose for posting that? What was you telling us?
Greetings. Well, I just want to add on what Brother Scotty was saying. He's correct in it was definitely a response to the racist propaganda that was coming out at the time. But my reason for posting the book was to highlight the philosophy that he was espousing at that particular time, that despite these created races and the propaganda that's coming out, they have no choice but to intermix with each other. And if they were just patient and, you know, they just wait and bide their time, then the mixed children or these mixed populations will be the majority. And at that particular time, they will be able to take over politically, or you know, they would be, they would have the numbers to pretty much enact whatever they wanted to do. And, you know, so they wouldn't be subject to the so-called races anymore, because they would be the majority and the things that they would be able to do from that. So I just wanted to highlight that philosophy, because I mean, biologically it is true. So
now I'm glad you said that,
but, you know, but
I'm gonna check that out, but I'm glad you said that, because I wanted to ask, like, we see that going on. Why would you start, putting the idea out there that you should mistreat them children that's growing up with your children, because you're gonna spouse off to your child, which is gonna go out and reciprocate what you done taught them? Not you per se. I mean, you know, we done heard that side of this argument. Now, when that happens, that's what we were speaking about earlier. As far as my whole thing was, when you treat people like that, you create the monster that you're already seeing. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree. I believe that, you know, the socialization of the children is going to vary greatly as to, you know, what kind of treatment you're going to get in return, whether they're mixed or they look the same. So, yeah. How they are socialized has a great factor in, you know, how they see the world and how they are in turn going to treat those who are in the world once they rise into power.
So another question, or Brother Rise, did you have something to add to that?
Yes. I was going to say that kind of ties into the discussion I had earlier about the, you know, the separation of the families of Latino, and like Scotty said, they shouldn't be called immigrants. They're actually refugees. When you look at how they got here in proper context, they didn't come here, you know, with basically safety where they came from, and, you know, they just happily chose, hey, I want to go to America. They come here under duress. They come here escaping, you know, Mexican killer gangs and drug cartels and all kinds of terrorism from the government and crap like that. So they're coming here as refugees. And, you know, like I
some
said...
A lot of them still feel like it's their land, like Brother Scotty was saying.
Well, that's a whole another conversation. Like I said, this is their ancestral land. It was taken from them by the people who now call that territory America. So they're not really illegally coming here. And this is their
space.
They
sold it, so...
Well, yeah,
they sold
pretty
it.
Much.
They got swindled, but they sold it. I mean, just so the listeners know, they sold it.
You're absolutely correct, and it's just the whole idea that these people's numbers are going to surpass everyone, and like I said, they have literally out-procreate every group in the country, including black people. Their numbers are just you know, they're growing at incredible speed, and the whole idea is that, you know, if we're focused around justice, when they do take control, they will, at least some of them will treat us in a just manner, knowing that we focused on justice in the situation with them. If we all just say, ah, yeah, you're getting what you deserve because y'all come here and y'all take our jobs and, you know, y'all practice racism on us like white folks do. And I'm not saying some of them don't. Some of them do. But you got to remember, we get the same indoctrination no matter where we're from. The same misinformation we get about other people, they get about us. And until we start to take control and mitigate, just like Scotty said, when it comes to information, I don't trust nobody. You know, I'm gonna vet what you say. If, you know, before I run around saying, yeah, this is true, this, that, and the third, I'm gonna do that. And it should be the same thing when people come here. You just make you know, or find a way to make some inroads with them, and find out ways that you can help them facilitate having a decent life in the new country, and at the same time, school them. They don't come here knowing the history. What happens is either the white supremacists are going to teach them, which they're going to teach them anyway because they teach us all, because they're the ones who set, you know, set all the rules of the way the game is going to be played, or we can have some say in that and humanize ourselves to people that we're going to be dehumanized in order to make another enemy, so that they buffer our ability to focus on the real problem, which is the colonizers. And that's all I've been saying all along. Go ahead.
Brother Chris, we're going to come to you in a minute. Sister?
Yeah, in regards to this outnumbering in the sense of the Mexicans and Latinos who have come here or been here for centuries, I think mainly we as black people have become so integrated into the white man's system that we pretty much follow, you know, what we always have done is follow whatever it is they set before us. And this abortion thing, you know, we fed into that too, and we killed our babies. And they believe in that. This is why these white women are marching. They believe in abortion and killing their children. And we pretty much fed into that. And as a result, we disseminate our own population as well. But the Mexicans and the Latinos, I believe, are more family-oriented in their culture, where they don't believe in the aborting, you know, of their babies. So therefore, yeah, they are more numerous and outnumbering everybody because they never fed into that abortion thing. So mainly that's what I wanted to point out.
No, oh, that was great.
Yeah.
And it's no, wonderful I do, yeah.
I did want to speak to that.
We got Chris, too. We got Chris right here.
Okay, let's listen to him.
I just wanted to shout out and say, if you look at the history of people in South America, they were colonized before Africans were brought over here and mixed in, and when Native Americans got involved and everybody got mixed in. So they are more foundational because they've been colonized way before we were dealing with what we were dealing with. But the reason why we are more of a powerful position, even though people say we are less when they take us just in the United States and not think about all the people who look like us all over the world, because we're just operating under just the United States only. But if we, you know, we were colonized, or this happened to us lastly, that's why we're not as together as they are, because they were conquered 15th century. And then this stuff with us was 16th, 17th, 18th until now, and it probably was earlier than the 15th if you really look at when Spain started coming down doing what they was doing. But, you know, that was just my point on that. I'll say this at the end. I'll say this real quick on the end note. The mulatto thing causes division. That should be eliminated in the United States. Like, that's like division when another person in the United States calls another person a mulatto based on whatever they connected with. It causes division, and I feel it shouldn't even be spoken on in agreement. A caller could come in, but I don't think it should be on somebody's platform, especially on this network, because this network is not propagating that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that should be a code. What is
that? Hey, can you turn down your radio? All right. Over here in the chat real quick, Scotty said black people are increasing in numbers. The only population declining is white people. That is correct. They have a negative birth rate. Yes, Hispanics are largely Catholics. Abortion is strictly taught as a sin by Catholics. They don't even want you to practice birth control.
Yep.
That is why they are the fastest growing population in the U.S.
That is very true. And also there's a history to the cultivation of abortion amongst black people. There's a great documentary called Ma'afa 21 where they go into the history of abortion and how it was actually originally it was white women that was having sex on such astronomical levels and getting pregnant
and had no way to abort the baby. So there was an epidemic of what they call botched abortions and home abortions and back alley abortions, which created the necessity. And at that time, they said that black people almost had a zero teenage pregnancy rate. So we were, culturally, our children didn't even get down like they did. And then they created the abortion facilities to end the epidemic deaths of white females that were having these children out of wedlock and didn't want to embarrass their family, so they would die doing these botched abortions. They created Planned Parenthood and these organizations. The white people started using it, and eventually they started having sex less, while black children started having sex more. And they started propagating abortion to the black children, and they started placing strategically Planned Parenthoods in black neighborhoods. And in that documentary, they also show that affluent white people donate thousands of dollars to Planned Parenthood for them to abort specifically black children. And they have them recorded saying, I want this money to go towards the abortion of a black child. I don't want that child being competition for my baby that we just had a number of months
Margaret,
ago.
Margaret so Sanger.
Mm-hmm.
We done a whole show on that.
Yes, we did. But I just wanted to just let people know there's a history behind how, you know, we got to this epidemic proportions of abortion, and that is something that's propagated to our children. It really is. And it's a systematic thing. And that documentary gives the most comprehensive information on abortion. And actually, they said that we've lost more human beings through abortion than we ever lost during the slave trade, after the slave trade, from black on black violence. None of that matches the abortion rate. And one of the black pastors calls it womb lynching, and I borrowed that term from him because that's literally what it is. And the way they get into it in that documentary, it just, and you should find it for free on YouTube. It's like maybe an hour and a half, like 90 minutes long, but the history is just incredible. And they go through the whole Margaret Sanger thing too. So yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there, but I like that she did bring that up.
Brother Rio, your mic is open. And you were saying that mixed children have been used as a tool of division. Now let us hear it, sir.
Oh, I was just being respectful of Brother Chris and you know, his desire not to pretty much talk about that topic on the platform. So I was just kind of, you know, addressing and picking his brain in the chat room.
Okay, yeah, but when you call them out, though, you gotta specifically pick the person who's being that way. You can't call them out because of what they look like, and that's what I've been hearing. People have been calling them out when you don't even know the character of the person. It's just automatically saying, but nobody is pointing out Kim or Ted over here who is of mix or has a white or black mama that has done something to someone. Nobody's doing that. They're calling out babies at birth and just saying what they're going to be and how it's going to happen. And that's incorrect.
It's like setting the trajectory for a child's life before they've lived it and saying just because they have a white parent, this just means automatically they're going to be, you know, part of this mixed race buffer class that's going to hold down so-called pure black people who have two black parents. It's not even pure, but just a person who has two black parents. And that is just patently false. I've seen some of the most anti-black, self-hating, delusional so-called black people that have two black parents. I've just experienced that. It's no different. You can find them in any category that you name as far as, you know, the color spectrum is concerned or the racial spectrum is concerned. But the truth is, I think that we've been pushed into the color politics on such a deep level that we've become diluted in our understanding. Is there a historical precedent to that concept? Yes. And I think Dr. Chancellor Williams did a great job in The Destruction of Black Civilization laying that out and using actual history as the foundation of that. But what you're dealing with are people in a totally different time frame, and where race is something that is so complex. And I've always said this, and Jenna and I have talked about this off the air. If a so-called mixed race child is raised by their black family members and have contact with those family members and are able to be taught their actual history and the history of their people in this country, I don't see that child growing up to be a buffer for any colonizer. If that child is taken by the white parent and strictly raised in a white environment, and in most cases they'll be told that they're white or they'll be told that they're mixed race and not black, and I can see that child having the potential to become a tool of the system of white supremacy due to the confusion that is infused in that child by their white supremacy. That's my
opinion. Take it a step further, Brother Ross, because that was a great question.
Yeah.
And you answered it pretty well. I had a question since you answered most of my points. Is
Brother Jenner, can I comment?
When this happened. Yeah, just a second. Well, now, go ahead, brother, go ahead.
I just want to say I agree with you in what you're saying, Brother Ross, and I can't speak for other people and how they may entertain the topic, but I know that every time that I brought it up or what we've tried to bring up on our platform is from that historical perspective of how the mixed races have been used as a divisive tool. Not to point the finger presently in saying that, you know, mixed race children are going to be an issue, so you shouldn't, they should be eliminated and there should be no intermixing between the races at all. I'm just saying that, you know, history has shown that the oppressors or the people who are in power presently have used these mixed race children to divide our own communities. And since they are still in power and they do oppress and still have the power to come in and remove whatever children they want to through these, you know, these contracts that are in place, I mean, it's still an elephant in the room. And it's something that we're going to have to discuss at some particular time, because if it works once, they're not creative people. They're going to try to use the same strategy again. So, it, you know, in my opinion, it deserves to be put on the table at some point. But
let me jump in real quick.
Now, yes, sir. Hold on, Ross. Scotty did. I'll read Scotty's thing in a second.
Yeah, I was going to speak on it too, but go ahead.
I understand what you're saying with the historical context, and I done heard that argument, and I've heard it a lot more vicious also. And what happens is that people get excited because they starting to feel good about something that has nothing to do with them, which will have them projecting that off to somebody else, that we'll have an opportunity to do something, which creates the division that you're talking about. You talking about centuries ago. And now I done heard people try to reference that and then say that this is what's going to happen. A lot of those, it's not that much as far as black and white race mixing as is being propagated in the first place. That's the first thing. But since we got that out the way now, if you're telling people to separate them because of something that happened in the extensive past, people actually start believing that, like Brother Scotty was saying, people trust what you're saying, and that's just not true. That has to say that most of these black men or these black women who are having these children now are just deserting them off with the white parent. I mean, so that's the part of those arguments that I don't understand, and they never really seem to get answered. And I'm not saying you said separation at all. That's just that was just one of the topics that we was getting on to last week, because that was one of the statements made. I didn't say you say that at all, brother. I know you had something to say, and we're gonna come to you in a minute, Brother Scotty. Go ahead with your statement, Ross.
Yeah. I just think to me there are too many so-called mixed race freedom fighters that were no less zealous about ending the system of white supremacy and abolition work than people who had two black parents. So to me, that censors it for me as far as that's concerned. I just think that the way that counter-racist code says to approach a situation with a person that has a white parent is to have that person discuss that. And once you understand that, it doesn't mean that you label them. It just means that now that you're aware of that, if during your discussions on the system of white supremacy, if something comes up and that person takes a position that is possibly counterproductive as a victim of white supremacy, you understand now that the possibility of that is coming from the fact that they have a white parent, which is fine because that's their parent. And as a victim, VGQ, they're entitled to that, but that way you, as another victim who's trying to work towards solving the problem, being aware of that, you don't judge them for that. You make any adjustments you need to make in what you're doing so that you're focused on the goal. So to me, that is the way you vet things. You just, hey, you find out, hey, you know, is your, oh, my father's white. Okay, cool. You know, it's good to know that. Thanks for telling me that. Hey. And it's not, it's the same thing. It's just the way you should function. Rather than being automatically judgmental, that is the approach you take, and then it should also provide you insight towards understanding that particular victim's psychological position, because they might have a white parent and be just as on it like you are, and you don't have anything to disagree on. But if something comes
hold
up,
on, Brother Ross,
you have that little bit.
we down at the last 10 minutes, and Brother Scott had a question. You know, always end with you, but Brother Rio said you have melanated parents that teach white is right. And that's what I was gonna step in with that too, because we have a lot. Remember, all of this started because we turned on each other. And we always have to keep mind of that while we pointing the finger at somebody else, creating a non-existent enemy. We creating it. Brother Scotty, go ahead.
Yeah, as I was touching upon in the chat room, if we're gonna eliminate mulattoes from you know, consideration or what have you, or to just say that all mulattoes history has had a detrimental impact on us, we're gonna have to get rid of a whole bunch of people that are being called black by everybody and recognized as black that were mulatto. We're talking about Frederick Douglass. We're talking about Gabriel Prosser. We're talking about Denmark Vesey. I said Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner. We are talking about a whole bunch of victims of slavery that was mulatto. And it wasn't, and so then we also have to ignore the fact that some scared, terrorized victims who had two parents that were black or African descent or whatever, who also betrayed these movements and told Massaw so that he can get his freedom, he gonna sell everybody else out and tell Massaw about the rebellion. So to me, again, Mr. Fuller touches upon this when he talks about your skin color means nothing if you don't believe in practicing justice. We have seen people all throughout history of many different ethnic classification, religions, whatever category you can come up with, man, woman, who have acted incorrectly and unjust towards other human beings. And but then we've also, on the flip side of that, seen those same people aspire, you know, to great things, you know, and to practice justice. So I mean, if I don't believe in practice justice, then Mr. Fuller say, I don't care what color you are, who your daddy is, what your name is, how tall you are, who your cousin is, you don't have any business breathing. Because that you practice injustice. So that's how I approach it.
They and only want to hear.
And then also, you know, when we say these things, that person that might be on the line with you, or you might be calling into their show, they may have some of these mulattoes in their family. It might be their children. It might be a cousin. Hell, it might be their mama. It might be their grandchildren. We don't, remember, children don't pick their parents. they're a result of human beings copulating and having sex. So I just had to take it back to character and even Fuller's question about trust. Who can you trust? Well, a person to show you whether or not they're trustworthy.
If you let them talk long enough. Hey, I think that's Brother Tommy. Your mic is open, and we're going to come to you, Brother Chris.
Yeah, yes, sir. Good evening, everybody on the call. Good evening. I've been listening to the discussion. I think one thing that we're all overlooking is that the original people on the planet, from regardless of what landmass you want to speak to, were melanated people. And those melanated people had inheritance to that land. And the coming of the European and their aggression and brutality was specifically against those so-called black people. You can add different races of people into the picture who have been a result of the mixture, but the brutality was against a specific people. And because of that specific people's genetic code and genetic ability and the design of white supremacy all over the world is to relegate that black man and woman to the lowest position possible. And they have co-opted people who are descendants of that mixture. No one on this call is stating anything negative about a mixed person, because we recognize the humanity in all of us. So we have to be able to recognize that we need to focus on us. And it seems like because we are recognizing we need to focus on us specifically, that people have a problem with that. Why would people... Hold on. Us, melanated people, black people, the original people of the planet. Why would anyone assume, because we need to focus on us raising back to where we were, that there's negative feelings and thoughts about other people? See, that's where the problem comes in. When we as black people focus on us, now all of a sudden it's a problem. Why? And I think it's a problem because people have been programmed.
Well, hold on. Because I could tell you upset a little bit. So
no, I'm not upset. I'm just my issue is. Go ahead.
Just hold on. Because we can hear it in your voice, and it's all mm-hmm. good. We can see you mm-hmm. very passionate, but mm-hmm. like Brother Scotty said, when you talking about them, some of the people that's listening have these children, and you are meaning to tell us, everybody that's listening, that those people who have those children, those are not them, because that's what you just said. If
that
I'm not
what
mistaken.
I'm saying, what I'm saying is,
you said. Once
we are having a discussion about real life issues, and of course, matter of fact, me and Rob specifically has had conversations that we know that the Europeans who are dominating now have used people of mixed descent against the original man. We know that is written in history. There ain't no need to run and hide from that.
That has been stated. Tonight. Can you give me one specifically what you're talking about here recently? Can you show me that?
No, my issue is not to point that. My issue is not to point that out. My issue and my reason for calling is there's nothing wrong with black people worrying about black people. There's nothing wrong with
that,
and I don't understand why people are upset about that.
Because
when was that ever
the
issue,
Brother Jim?
Well,
When was black people loving other black people a issue?
Well, when we have basic discussion, when we had a discussion about is there a difference between a mixed race child born of a white mother and a black mother, what's wrong with having that discussion?
There's nothing wrong
there's
with
nothing
the discussion.
Wrong with having that discussion.
But so yeah. so why do people get up in arms?
It is something wrong. It is with something wrong with you having a show like that and you allowing somebody to chop one end of that conversation up and nobody says anything. That's what's wrong with that particular conversation since you brought that up. That's exactly what's wrong with it. Because you keep telling me about what could happen.
I'm not the thought
police. I'm not the thought police. Tonight. Hold on, Brother Tommy. Because mm-hmm. this would come out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. You said that first you said that when we it's a problem that we want black people to love black people. That's the first thing you said.
No, the
then
focus
said,
on just
yes.
only black people. I said the focus only on black people.
Well,
and
I asked
well,
Brother Jerry, first of all, Jerry,
I asked you when did that become the problem?
Jerry, Jerry, I just came,
when
bro.
We talked about
I
this
can't.
Issue.
Brother Jerry, I just can't, man. I just can't. Okay. First of all, some of us don't even classify ourselves as black. We classify ourselves as some others. And then for these others who classify themselves as something else to think they're going to lead a conversation on black first don't even make no sense. How you going to have a conversation about black first and you ain't black? You may look like me, but you apparently don't identify as I do. Okay, now, if we can point to Chancellor's book and the mulattoes that he pointed out in that book, but we can find just as many purebred Africans that sold African other tribes into slavery. So it ain't that we can't have the conversation, but is that conversation, are we promoting justice or are we promoting some other stuff to where we're judging people based off of what their parents were while we totally ignore the people who meet our blood quantum qualifier and we ignore the harm that they do to us. No child of mine, let me say something. You don't have to worry about my oldest grandson's white grandmother co-opting him and teaching him white supremacy, okay? Because he's being raised in my household and being raised by my children who didn't even know that the person she created this child with had a white mother because his mother wasn't in his life. And he looked black. He was one of them mulattoes. But he identifies black. So when I say, when you talk about black first, in the historical context of the United States, black mulattoes, so-called mulattoes, are classified as black by white people. I just posted in BTR community some of the Jim Crow laws that said that if you had any percentage of non-white black blood in you, you was black. So I just don't even understand why we having the conversation about mulattoes and if they being used to bring us down and all of that. We bring ourselves down.
And I wanted to ask who's classifying who's going to be considered black in that discussion?
Exactly. Who's classifying? Who's doing the classifying?
As long as what you just said, the hue of your skin doesn't matter to me. It is your position on the problem. As long as you have the right position on the problem about ending this system, then you rolling with me. Because I, like I said, I've seen people as dark as Idi Amin who are self-hating and they have the most anti-black countenance you ever want to come across. And I've seen people that are so-called mixed race children that are more staunch African-centered, regardless of where they're from on the planet, than some folks who have two black parents. So it's who's setting the precedent for what's going to be considered black. And then also, who sets the terms of the discussion? Because it's just simply an honest rendering of a person's character. You just can't broad brush a whole group of people and say because they have a white parent, this is what their lot in life is. That is inaccurate.
Yeah, one
it's
of those
really
white
about
parents.
That individual's character, and if they show you that their character is in line with justice, then that should be the only qualifier. Period.
You know, Brother Ross, and again, this goes back to what I was talking about earlier. Max Parthas, we were talking about abortion. Mm-hmm. It was illegal for Max Parthas to be born, okay, because of Jim Crow laws that said that blacks and whites can't get married or procreate. It was illegal for him to be born, but he was born anyway. He has a white father. And let me tell you, I ride and die for Max Parthas before I ride and die for some other black folks who won't even call themselves black but want to be something else. Because Max Parthas has shown me over 6 years that he is against the system of racism and white supremacy, and more importantly, putting in work to bring an end to slavery of all persons. So that's what I say. We have
brother,
to go
brother by Jerry,
the
can I respond?
Yes, please do.
See, here we go again. Another example of blaming the victim. When a person wants to specifically talk about the melanated issue, people want to make it seem as if you're downplaying other people.
But you are.
And I specifically said on this phone line that Brother Rio and I, we don't ever downplay, talk bad about people of mixed ancestry or mixed
But you
descent.
Just did.
Because we are,
you
full,
just
on, brother,
did.
Scotty,
you
we are
just
fully
did.
Aware
you
of
just
people
did.
Who are mixed descent that have rode hard for black people, black causes, and black issues. We didn't say that at all.
So what's the point of bringing up
melanated people? Every time we bring up melanated people and want to specifically talk about melanated people, here comes these people with issues because they feel like they're compromised. Well, I'm not compromised. I can talk about melanated people and the brutality white people have exhibited against melanated people without including nobody else, because the specific target is us.
But you're saying that that mulatto people.
No, you make an excuse. You're
no,
telling
but,
me what
but
I'm
you
saying.
Came on
you're
this
not
line.
Listening to what I'm saying.
You
I can
came
say
on this
anything
line.
And never said nothing negative.
You know what? Calm down, brother. Calm down. I can tell you in your emotions. We can check the record. We can go to the podcast after I publish it, where you said out your own mouth that mulattoes have been used as a weapon to
and
conquer.
They have. And the history shows it. And Brother Ross has even admitted that to me when me and him have had discussions.
So okay, so as I finish, so that right there is attacking members of our family. Okay? They are black. You don't classify them as black. I classify them as black. Okay? That's the issue. When you single out a group of people to say that, hey, this group of people right here, not point to individuals with names that may have betrayed this movement or betrayed that group of people or told it on this rebellion that was about to happen. No, when you use that term, mulatto, which was created by racist white people, to label entire people and say, hey, these people was used as a weapon against us. That's an indictment of every person who you have classified as a mulatto. Am I incorrect in my understanding?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
We have not singled out mulattoes. We have had the same discussion on the Moors. We have had the same discussion on the Masons. And we have had the same discussions on other so-called turncoats within our community. We are not singling out any group within our own community. We are addressing issues that are going to have to be talked about if we are going to come to some kind of unity. We can't run from this. Just because
I'm not looking for our unity.
I understand and applaud you for the way that you teach your children, but you just one person. We talking about a whole nation who have a whole diverse difference of experiences. If we don't talk about it, how are we going to come together on some kind of unity?
Well, there's not going to be any unity. Don't mistake me as a person who strives for unity that I feel is impossible because of these disagreements. And some of these disagreements are cardinal sins, in my opinion. Me naming all the different groups that have harmed the black struggle just show that we ain't never been unified. There's never been any unity. Show me where that has happened. You always have even in revolutions and rebellions, everybody did not participate. It's a small number of dedicated people. I ain't trying to unify.
Are you saying that means we shouldn't be working towards you?
Hold on, Brother Rio.
I mean, it's just a simple question. You. I just want to know, do you think we should we not be working towards that?
We should be working towards ending slavery and the system of white supremacy by any means necessary. That's so what I work towards.
Unity would be in that scenario then, correct?
If that's the central focus, then we ain't focused on the individual.
Around the problem.
Everybody, hold on, y'all. Hold on, y'all. Because we done ran over. This has been great. Nobody pointed out you, Brother Rio, or Brother Tommy. Once again, these conversations do need to be had. And like Brother Scotty said, my children and my other cousins that are of mixed race, and it's not always white, but they fall into that quote-unquote mulatto class. And it is a lot of people that pick with them. They do that. Yeah, and when you have the show, like I said, it was never directed at y'all in general. But when you allow people to say certain things and it goes unchallenged, people take that as the truth, like Brother Scotty said earlier. They believe this because we always tell them to go research, but we all know a lot of people are getting this information for the first time and then they go talk about it. They don't go research it. So when you have something like that going on your show, you supposed to be the counter to that. But that's my point. That was my point the whole time. It never had nothing to do with you or Tommy. But I understand y'all frustration. But you could have just hit me. We ain't had to do this on the air.
This is what I say about that. I mean, if you have a difference of opinion that you think has not been expressed or the scales haven't been balanced, I mean, you're more than free to balance that. But I'm not going to be the thought police. It's up to people to do their own due diligence.
See, look, there you go. You're focusing back on yourself again. Anyway. This was never about you. I don't need that. I can do that here.
Hey, Jenna, real quick, on the subject of thought police.
That will be the show for tonight.
Brother Jenna.
You had something before you wanted to go, Brother Scotty?
Yeah, Brother Jenna, on the question of thought police. I am the thought police of Black Talk Radio Network. This network was created with my energy, with a vision. Propaganda is very important. Malcolm X taught me that. And so if I ain't going to police my own network for incorrect information or divisive information or fraudulent information, I don't have any business running a network. So I am the thought police, and I wear that title if people want to give me that title. Okay, I have kicked many of people off of this platform, off of this network, because they were engaged in anti-blackness, insulting black people, when if you knew from jump that's what the people classify themselves as when you came to this network, the big clue being the name, then you should have never came. That's like going up in some Hispanic person's house and then just saying, oh, you need to take your ass back to Mexico, or you need to do, you know what I'm saying? You don't go into other people's house. You do that in your own spaces. So I am the thought police, and I try to do a good job in policing thought. I just don't let anybody on this network to put out any kind of information, because we got too much propaganda that we got to face from white people. We don't need black people or whatever they want to call themselves putting out that anti-black propaganda to our own people. No, it's not going to happen.
So, Brother Scott, do you feel like we've said anything that's out of order? That
I don't listen to your program. To be honest with you, I don't.
And if you research it, you can't find the evidence of what we're saying to be right and exact.
Brother Rio, I don't listen to y'all program like that. Y'all do your own broadcast, and I taught Tommy how to engineer the program, so I don't have to sit there and listen. I be having other stuff to do. The times that I have tuned in, I didn't hear any incorrect information, but there has been a time, And I left comments on the podcast on Black Talk Radio Network where I felt like some very disturbing information was put out. And I made my thoughts known on that. But it was only that one podcast that I came across. I know I'm not going to be in 100% agreement with everything, but there are some things I just have principles about, and I won't compromise. Believe me, bro, if y'all was a problem, if this was something that was constantly going on every week, you wouldn't be on Black Talk Radio Network. I can point you to some people that used to be on the network that's no longer on the network. And I know that y'all don't classify yourselves as black and y'all have some beliefs that I see, you know, I've been shown no evidence to convince me that's true, but that's okay. That's okay. But I'm just here to say this is a network that believes in practicing justice. This was my vision when I created this network. First, as a safe digital space for black people, African Americans, the African diaspora. Shout out to our listeners in the Caribbean and in Africa. Okay. And then secondly, is for us to be able to have these dialogues and what have you, but we should always be striving to practice justice. If a person don't understand what practicing justice means, that means that you don't mistreat. Let me give you Mr. Fuller's definition of what practicing justice is, okay, or what white supremacy is. He says it's a system of mistreatment based on skin color, okay, and that when you in a system of justice, everyone, not black people, not half black people, not melanated people, not white people, not Asian people, but in a system of justice, everyone who needs help gets help. Okay, that's the system of justice, and no one is mistreated. That's what I'm striving.
Thank you, Brother Scotty. And once again, yeah, shout out to you, Scotty. Once again, sure. Brother Rio, Brother Tommy, if you're listening.
Scotty, this is the only thing I would ask. If you do ever have a problem with us, then you know, just come and talk with us. You know, because, you know, sometimes I didn't see your comments on the BTR community. But, you know, I appreciate direct dialogue. So I know we ain't going to agree about everything. But, you know, I think we can still understand where each other is coming from. And, you know, if we choose to disagree at the end of the day, ain't no harm, ain't no foul. But, you know, just for sake of being on the same platform and family and misunderstanding, and so things don't fester and grow and be blown out of proportion. I'm not saying it is, but I mean, just to alleviate things in the future, you know, if we can dialogue, you know, it's all good.
Yo, I'm glad y'all got that out. Now, I'm finna get ready to shut the show down right after Brother Roz, but just to answer your question, this never had nothing to do with you or Brother Tommy. Y'all was making it about y'all. Like I said, I was addressing something that I heard one of your listeners say, and I'm addressing that. And it took us 2 weeks. I'm sorry you felt some type of way about that, but it didn't ever have nothing to do with y'all. Glad y'all chimed in and gave that point of view. But I also, as well as others, have a different point of view. So with that being said, we appreciate you and continue to show up with us. Sorry, absolutely. Sorry about that, Brother Chris. But you know I got you next week, yo. Word up. Brother Rise, hit us with the prayer so we can get on out of here.
No problem. Thank you for being with us this evening, this Tuesday night. Peace to everyone who chimed in, Brother Chris, Brother Scotty, Brother Tommy, Brother Rio, the sister from Florida as well. We greatly appreciate the callers and the listeners. These conversations have to be had so that, you know, there's no animosity, just so everyone understands. We just had a passionate conversation amongst family, and sometimes it gets like that. But we good, and we'll definitely see you again next Tuesday. We're going to get up out of here. I know we went and did some overtime, so thank you for staying with us a little bit longer than normal. So we're going to get into the prayer and get up out of here. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest level of black self-respect at all times and all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another black person.
Again, it has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately and end the prison industrial complex slavery in modern day form. I am in the love of you all. More love is in me. I am. We're going to get out of here. Peace. Go ahead, Scotty.
All right, peace.
What up, son?
What's good, Dad?
Billie Holiday said a long time ago, no two people on earth are alike, and it's got to be the same way in music. Otherwise, it isn't music. Always remember, never follow the crowd. I have something important to tell you, and I'm going to let you know
what it is.